ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
देवहूतिर् उवाच निर्विना नितरं भूमं असाद् इन्द्रियथर्षनात् येन सम्भाव्यमेनेन प्रफानन्दं तमा प्रभो.
Devahuti said, Devahuti is the wife of the great sage Kardama Muni. And before reading this beautiful sloka, I'd like to share with you a little of the background of the life of Devahuti. Svayambhuva Manu was the king of all humanity. This is in the Satya Yuga. And he had a beautiful and wonderful daughter of the name Devahuti. She was the reservoir of all good qualities. Of course, it is said that good fruits come from good trees. We were explaining last night how Svayambhuva Manu, although he was a grihastha, with a wife and children and so many responsibilities, God was in the center of everything he did. He was showing us by his example how we should all live according to our capacity. Svayambhuva Manu, from the moment he would rise in the morning, he would hear the beautiful glories of the Supreme Lord. He would go to the temple of the Lord, offer his head at the feet of the Lord, offer his family, his wealth, his everything at the feet of the Lord. In this way, he showed us that a grihastha should put a temple within their home and dedicate that temple to Krishna. What does it mean to dedicate the temple to Krishna? It means, Krishna, you are the proprietor of this house, not me. It is the greatest illusion and the source of all misery when we try to consider that we are the proprietors, we are the controllers, and we are the enjoyers. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarvalokamaheshwaram suhradam sarvabhutanam gyatvamam shantim rajchati. Krishna says in Gita, I am the proprietor of everything that exists. And therefore, everything is meant to be utilized in my loving service. One who understands these principles and trusts my word that I am your best well-wishing friend, such a person only can attain true peace, inner peace. And after all, why do we work all day? Why do we have a family? Why do we have a nice home? Why are we trying to look for some prestige and dignity within society? It is all because we think these things will bring us happiness and bring happiness to our loved ones. But if you have all these things but no happiness, no peace of mind, what is the use? What is the value? But real peace, real happiness is something that comes from within. And Svayambhuva Manu is showing, by his example, that in the family setting, if you want to be peaceful, you simply have to recognize that my family is the property of God. My body is the property of God. My home is the property of God. My wealth is the property of God. All of my abilities are the property of Krishna. Nothing is mine. To recognize that fact is the beginning of human life. To not recognize that fact, according to the Shastra, is uncivilized mentality of an animal. Therefore, coming before the Lord first thing in our day and offering our head at His feet and offering all that is around us at His lotus feet for His service and for His pleasure is real humanity, is real human life. It is spiritual life. And anyone can do it.
Yad karoshi yad asnashi yad juhoshi dadasi yad tapasi asidhan konte yad tat kurusho darapa.
And when we cook in our home, we should cook in the consciousness that who has provided this food?
I may have worked and gotten some money,
but where did my energy to work come from? Where did my brain come from? Where did my body come from?
It's all the gifts of God. And the food that we eat, it's coming out of the earth. Did I create the earth? The earth is the gift of God.
And the sun and the rains, they are the gifts of God. So why not recognize the fact? Why exploit what is not ours? Why not be grateful? And how do we show our gratitude? When we cook for the pleasure of the Lord who has given. We reciprocate. This is called love. Love means reciprocation. Krishna loves us. He's given us everything. But we can only understand that love and feel the bliss of that love when we are willing to reciprocate. So we take that food and we cook it in the consciousness that this is for the loving offering of my Lord. And afterwards, myself, my family, my friends, we will all take this prasad to our full satisfaction and enjoy not only the taste of the food, but we will enjoy the mercy of God, which gives the real pleasure to the soul. Swayambhuva Manu lived in this way. He would come with his friends, his family, they would chant the holy name of the Lord before the beautiful murti of the Lord. He would invite the sadhus and the brahmins to come to his home to discuss the transcendental pastimes and teachings of the Supreme Truth. In this way, his life, his family was peaceful, centered, harmonious in God's love. And then he went out and he performed his duties of ruling the entire state. But he never did it for his own greedy purposes. But he did it as a loving service to Krishna. And therefore, his subjects loved him. Because they all knew that he cared about them. The natural quality of one who is God conscious is to become loving and compassionate toward all living beings. And with this spirit, he ruled the earth. One may think that love is a weakness, but greed and envy is a strength that will protect you. But Swayambhuva Manu was unconquerable. He had armies that could defend even the greatest onslaughts. But those armies were ruled and directed out of love and concern for the innocent, not out of greed and exploitation to conquer for his own purpose. So in this way, in whatever situation we have in life, if we always create a God-conscious atmosphere, the fruits of all of our endeavors will be sweet and full of love and full of devotion. And of course, ultimately, what is the fruit of family life? Our children. Swayambhuva Manu's daughter, Devahuti, she was so beautiful. She was so chaste. She was so loving. She was the embodiment of all good qualities. Even the demigods in the heavens were standing in line to marry her. She was an ocean of divine qualities. Because this is the way she was raised. If you want good children, you have to cultivate a fertile field around them so that their good qualities can grow. And that means putting God in the center of every aspect of your life, because your children will follow what you do. And according to the Bhagavatam, Guru na sasyat, swajani na sasyat, pita na sasyat, jani na sasyat. It is your first and foremost duty as a parent not to give food. The animals give their children food. Not to give a nice protective residence. The birds and the bears and the rats in the holes give their children a nice home. Not to give your children an education. Because if you see, the lions, the tigers, even the monkeys, they educate their children how to survive nicely. Huh? Have you ever seen the monkeys? They very carefully train their children. These things are necessary for survival, but that is not the purpose of a parent. The first and foremost responsibility of every parent, according to God, is that by your words and by your example in life, you have to train that child in such a way that that child will never have to suffer the repetition of birth and death again. That that child will find the supreme peace and happiness of God within his heart and return to the kingdom of God at the end of this sojourn on earth. And if we neglect that responsibility, we have failed. Even if we provide everything else. So Swayambhuva Manu, what a wonderful daughter he had. And when it came to get her married, he was very responsible. And by the arrangement of Lord Narayan, Swayambhuva Manu was told that he should marry his daughter to one yogi, a great sadhu, of the name of Kardama Muni. Now, Kardama Muni was not a businessman. He was a saint. He was living in the jungles, performing tapasya. So he handed his beautiful daughter over to him. His daughter, she never saw an inconvenient day in her life. She was brought up in royalty, where she had servants and protection at every moment. And here she was, living in the jungles with this great sadhu. And he was just all day long performing tapasya. And she was just waiting for something to do, chanting God's name throughout the day. She was such a nice wife, she wouldn't eat until after he ate. But he would never eat. So she became emaciated and thin. And because she was living like him, her beautiful silken hair became all matted and disarrayed. Her complexion became full of the coarseness of jungle life. Her beautiful shape became very lean and thin, so there was nothing but bones and little skin. She never complained. And after some years in this way, Kardama Muni was thinking, my wife, such a nice lady, she does everything for me, she assists me in all my yajnas, she's always accommodating. What have I done for her? I've made her look like this. She should have a nice child. So it's a long story, but by his mystic power, he realized that this jungle was too much in the mode of goodness to have children. Because you have to be a little in the mode of passion to have children. For you who have had children, you know. These brahmacharis, they may not know, but you can't be too much in the mode of goodness. So he decided, I have to create some sort of luxury just to make it like that. So by his mystic power, he created a mansion that floated in the air. It was huge. It was a beautiful palace with gardens, with lakes. with thousands of maidservants, and it could fly anywhere in the sky. Not by mechanical arrangements, but by mystic mantras. This is the power of great yogis. Today, when the electricity goes out, we have to find some generator somewhere and connect it up. It makes all sorts of horrible noises. But in those days, Kardama Muni was such a great mystic. No need for electricity, nothing. Just by his divine arrangement, it was floating throughout the universe. And then Devahuti was put into a pond of water where all of her natural, original beauty was restored. And they had 9 daughters first, and then 1 son. And that son, as we explained, good fruits come from good trees. Because Kardama Muni was such a great saint, he may not have provided his wife with the best material accommodations, but one thing he did provide her is the best son anyone could have possibly had. His name was Lord Kapila Dev. He was none other than Vishnu himself. And when the child grew up to be a young boy, Kardama Muni felt, I have done my job, and then he renounced the world. And he left his wife under the care of Kapila Dev. And this is one of the most famous and important of all chapters in all the Vedic literatures, what we are reading today. It is the discussion between Devahuti and her own son, Lord Kapila. Now it is said in the Bhagavad Gita that if you want to understand the truth, you must submissively approach a spiritual master. And with submissive inquiry and the willingness to render service, your heart becomes a fertile field for the seed of knowledge to grow. Advidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshantite jnanam jnaninastvata darshana. One may think, why Kardama Muni was so cruel that he just left? But he didn't just leave. He left her with a qualified son to take care, and he left her with all the necessities of life. He left her with this aerial mansion. And he left her to show how one should not be too much attached to anything but Krishna. The supreme love that he showed was to give Krishna. He gave his wife Krishna as a son. That is the real love. The supreme love of a mother is to give Krishna to the child. The supreme love of the child is to give Krishna to the mother. The supreme love of a father is to give Krishna to the family. Therefore, Kardama Muni was the topmost responsible husband and father. So Devahuti, she wanted to understand the supreme truth from her husband, from her son. So that brings us to the verse that we are reading today. Devahuti said, please listen very carefully, because unless you come to the platform of inquiring in the same spirit of Devahuti, you will never understand what is the truth, what is the goal of life, and how to attain it. Devahuti said, I am very sick of the disturbance caused by my material senses. For because of this sense disturbance, my Lord, I have fallen into the abyss of ignorance. Your lordship is my only means of getting out of this darkest region of ignorance, because you are my transcendental eye, which by your mercy only I have attained after many, many births. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the origin and supreme Lord of all living beings. You have arisen to disseminate the rays of the sun in order to dissipate the darkness of the ignorance of the universe. Now be pleased, my Lord, to dispel my great delusion. Due to my feeling of false ego, I have been engaged by your Maya and have identified myself with the body and the consequent bodily relations. Devahuti continued, I have taken shelter of your lotus feet because you are the only person of whom to take shelter. You are the axe which can cut the tree of material existence. I therefore offer my obeisances unto you, who are the greatest of all transcendentalists, and I inquire from you as to the relationship between man and woman and between spirit and matter. You see, although Devahuti was born and raised in the most highly spiritual atmosphere, she was not proud. She is so humble that she is claiming that she is simply a victim of false ego and Maya. Unless you come to this platform, spiritual life never really begins. Devahuti is explaining that due to her fallen condition, she's very sick of the disturbance caused by her mind and senses. We are all living in a world where the mind and senses are constantly coming in contact with temptations which divert our attention away from the real purpose of life. It is described in the Bhagavatam that any one of the senses can take away one's intelligence if we allow our mind to be attached to the senses and their objects. Krishna says in the Gita that as a boat on the water is swept away by a strong wind, even one of the senses on which the mind focuses can carry away a man's intelligence. And you see, all the lessons of life, if you hear from the proper sources, will be revealed to you by God through nature, if you simply have the eyes to see. We have five senses. It is said that the eyes, how they can trap us. The moth sees the flame, and his eyes are so attracted to that flame that he simply wants to just attain it. And the glare of that flame intoxicates his mind through his eyes to such an extent that he's willing to do anything to get to that flame. Sometimes if it's on the other side of a window, that moth will be flying as fast as it can to try to break through the window just to get through that flame, enduring incredible pain. And when finally the fulfillment of all his desires is achieved, he reaches the flame, he is burned to ashes, destroyed by his own eyes. And the tongue likes to taste. The mind is very anxious to fix itself on finding pleasures for the tongue. How is the fish captured? The same way Maya captures the fish, she captures you. The fish is swimming around in the ocean, and the fish sees some beautiful little worm. I don't know if you know about fishing, but this is how they do it. And in that worm is a hook. And the fish is thinking, let me enjoy this worm. Such a nice worm. And he bites into that worm. And he feels there's a hook. But factually, he could still let go. The hook is only in his mouth. But that worm tastes so good that the fish swallows it. And when it swallows the hook, the worm, it swallows the hook. And then it is trapped. And then the fisherman just reels it in. A fish meets its death. The end. The end of another fish life due to attachment to the tongue. And it is explained that in the forest, when a hunter wants to find a deer, he knows the deer is very fond of nice music. They have those big, beautiful lotus-shaped ears. So the hunter plays a flute. And the deer is so attracted by the flute that he comes right before the hunter's gun, and then the hunter... And then there is the bee. The bee is very much attracted to smelling nice things. It is described that there is a certain type of flower that smells very fragrant. And when the bee comes into that flower to enjoy the sense of smell, the flower closes around it and traps it. And then there is the elephant. The elephant is the most powerful of all beings walking this earth. I have seen with my own eyes elephants with its trunk wrapping it around trees and ripping them out of the ground effortlessly. How to catch an elephant? It's very easy. With a female elephant, the sense of touch. They dig a ditch in the ground and they have a beautiful female elephant just standing there like this. And the male elephant wants to touch her, just wants to touch her, just rub his body against her. And he becomes so maddened by this idea of rubbing his body against her that when he rubs her, she's trained to push him in the ditch. And he falls in the ditch. And what is he thinking when he's in the ditch? Usually he's not thinking how to get out. He's thinking how I can get back to rub her again. This is the insanity of the mind and the senses. Any one of the senses on which the mind focuses can bring ruination to one's life by the traps of Maya. And this is the predicament. And how difficult it is to control the mind and senses, especially in this age that we are living, especially in a city like Bombay, where everywhere you go, someone's trying to sell you something by attracting your mind and senses. Trying to confirm the misconception that you are your body and you are the enjoyer. We are not this body. We are the eternal soul. And we should live for the soul, not simply for the senses. And more difficult than curbing the demands of the body and the senses is curbing the demands of the ego. How much we are anxious, we are hungry, we are thirsty, we are starving for recognition, prestige. Huh? What a horrible, insatiable appetite we have for these things. This is the condition of this world. Therefore, Devahuti, she's simply very honest. She's turning to her son, who happens to be God, and she's accepting as her guru. Whether you turn to God himself as guru, if he happens to be your son, or whether you turn to his representative, the bona fide spiritual master, we must approach the guru in this spirit. That I'm helpless. I'm helplessly in this predicament of life. I'm imprisoned by my mind and senses. And yet I'm so proud that I'm not even willing to admit it. I still want people to think I'm great. Even though I'm in the most abominable, embarrassing condition, for this pure spirit soul, which is meant to love God eternally, to be in Vrindavan with Krishna, enjoying Ras, for that soul, which is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss, to be simply hankering, lamenting over the petty little things of this body and senses? What an embarrassing condition. And yet, although I'm in such an embarrassing condition, I want people to think I'm very great. I'm very learned. I'm very skillful. I'm very wise. This is the foolishness of the conditioned soul. But when we simply come before the great souls and admit, yes, this is my condition, please instruct me. When Lord Kapila Dev saw that his mother really and truly wanted to understand how to love the Lord, what is devotion, what is bhakti, how to come out of suffering forever, how to find the supreme treasure of self-realization within her own life, how to share that treasure with all her loved ones and her friends. When he saw she was sincere and she was humbling herself before him, then Lord Kapila Dev, with great pleasure, was inspired to speak the highest knowledge. Lord Kapila Dev is one of the 12 Mahajans, and his great speaking is so deeply scientific. Sometimes people think that religion is sentimental, based on blind faith. I dare you, I challenge you to read these chapters of the Srimad Bhagavatam and tell me if this is sentimental blind faith. Lord Kapila Dev in these chapters is telling the supreme science in the most analytical way. What he said, the materialistic scientists today are just beginning to have some awareness of. He explains how this material existence was created systematically and exactly how it is going on. He calculates the gross and the subtle material energies. He calculates time and breaks it down not to minutes or seconds, but to an atomic particle. He explains exactly what takes place at the time of death. And what takes place, he gives a day by day, month, week by week, month by month report of what the child experiences within the womb of his mother. He explains how the ego works, how the mind works, and how the intelligence works with such systematic, scientific accuracy. Anything you want to know about anything, there is a thorough description by Lord Kapila Dev. But ultimately, the final conclusion of all of his teachings is very simple. That in order to be liberated from all the limitations of this temporary and limited world, we must learn the nature of the Supreme. And we must devote our lives in the loving service of the Supreme. Whether you are a mother, like Devahuti, or whether you are a grandmother, or whether you are a student, or whether you are a businessman, doctor, lawyer, sannyasi, brahmachari, farmer, whatever you may be. Simply, Lord Kapila Dev explains how to learn to dovetail your natural inclinations in devotional service to the Lord. And it is very simple. Make your house a temple of the Lord. Inquire like Mother Devahuti by trying to learn the path of truth from the great saints by reading the scriptures. And Lord Kapila Dev explains, but of everything, the quickest, the most important of all processes of purification is to chant the name of God. And anyone can do that. You remember these children that were sitting here before? When we were chanting, they were very happy playing their cymbals and singing so loudly. As soon as the philosophy starts, where are they? Where are they? I don't even know. They're somewhere. Somewhere where they don't have to hear philosophy. Philosophy, sometimes we have propensity, sometimes we don't. But everyone likes to sing and dance. Huh? Everyone, whoever they are, can become perfect by chanting God's name. Therefore, this is specifically the process in the age of Kali Yuga. Why be proud? According to the Shastra, Bhagavatam, all scholarship is meant simply to bring you to the point of simply accepting the sound of God's name. All philosophy in this age of Kali is simply to convince you to just chant Hare Krishna and be happy. It is the common denominator. In the kirtan of the Lord, nobody's better than anybody else. Because everyone could chant with enthusiasm. When people come together to chant the holy names, there's no longer the consideration of your nationality, of the color of your skin, of your particular religious affiliation, of whether you are rich or poor, literate or illiterate, high caste or low caste. In the name of God, we all harmonize. And the bind of love gradually ties our hearts together. So let us dive deeply into the ocean of transcendental pleasure, which is descended from the spiritual world in the sound of the holy name.